Spite, or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rockets rattling, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof.
That's a lovely, lovely voice.
Well, there you have it. That was Bane condoning the lovely little boy from the Dark Knight Rises rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. And the reason we chose that as the entrance for this week's podcast is we've got a little special edition. It's economics meets travel guides. It's rugby league heaven for my co-host over here, Mr. Joseph Boyden. We're doing a US special, given my recent trip there, and obviously Mr. Boyden having a special US-Australian diplomatic relations. And then we'll obviously talk some rugby league as well. Joseph, how are you today, mate?
Mate, I've never been better. Best week of my life. Best weekend of my life. I think, what was it? Friday's. Friday's result speaks for itself, mate. I'm feeling how every bloody Eels fan would be feeling right now. You know, I guess we could all see it coming. It was always going to happen, so I'm not surprised, but I'm thoroughly enjoying it, Pools.
Yeah, fantastic to hear, and it's good to hear you're riding the wave of the Blue and Gold Army. There was a bit of destiny about it. It was now or never for Parramatta, given the players who are leaving at the end of their season. So we are set for a Battle of the West, and we'll get to that a little later in the show for all our long-time listeners, including Joel from Surrey Hills, who no doubt is our top question. He sends a lot of questions in, long-time listener of the podcast. So shout out to Joel there. But let's get cracking, and let's move on to my reflections of my trip to the US. And yes, well, it was fantastic to get away and have a couple of weeks off. And yeah, you know, all holidays are good, but some are great. And this falls into the latter category. And what I've gone ahead and done, again, tying a bit of economics, bit of political football, if you will, with my trip, is that I've gone through some metrics in relation to livability of each city, because being an economist these days, I have to look through everything through a livability lens. You know, what is the cost of X, Y, and Z? You know, for X, Y, and Z, for those American listeners, you know, that's how you pronounce Z over there, said over there. And also, you know, what are the things to do? You know, which cities do I enjoy the most? And that sort of thing. So we're going to get to this, and we're going to go through it. So coming in, I went to five cities. I went to Los Angeles, for a bit of context for those listeners. I went to Los Angeles, Boston, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, and New York. So again, not a full cast, but again, I can only go across those places that I went. And coming in at number five on the list was Los Angeles. Not that I've got anything particularly against Los Angeles, it's just someone had to come in last. And unfortunately, I had Los Angeles. And the reason that was is because I think the Hollywood heavies over there, again, going off my lived experience and what my eyes saw, has spent too much time spending money on their studios and their condos and not enough time spreading the public good. The average wage is slightly above US average, $31.70 an hour compared to $28, but that's obviously taking it across, you know, all those Midwestern cities and southern states where cost of living is a bit cheaper. The average monthly salary, if you go off the $31.70 an hour and working 40 hours a week, is $5,495, but the median rent is $3,160. So in other words, that's 58% of your income for the median wage, and that is just one of the pinch points you look at in terms of housing affordability. Is you look at 30%. You should be spending more than 30% of your income on housing. Now, that's just a guide. You know, some people spend a bit more to that for a better lifestyle. So, but 58%, anything above 50% is severe housing stress. So you look at that and you can understand with the lived experience that we saw that the homelessness in the first part when I was in LA, I stayed in downtown. You know, and there was homeless people on every corner. There was beggars on every corner, and I'll never forget going down Northwestern Avenue on the way to Griffith Park Observatory, just at the Gulf, going from literally across two intersections where there was 100 people largely of black and Hispanic of descent lining up to recycle their bottles in one of those recycle machines, holes in their pants, no shoes on. You got two intersections across, people brunching, you know. And that just sort of signified the Gulf. LA is sort of the best and worst of America, with the excess and the sort of lifestyle you can if you have a really good job, if you've got a high-paying job compared to those who are down. I think unemployment rate is about 5.2%, so not too high, though I think it's still above the American average. And then you combine that with the average house price being $972,000. Relatively high minimum wage, $14.25. The US standard across the board, $7. So that was one thing. But a lot of those sort of coastal cities have a higher minimum wage. But yeah, that was just something. So that's why I came in at number five. Your thoughts on that and your reflections on that?
Yeah, mate. You often hear that LA is a bit of a shithole. I haven't spent too much time in it personally, but if it goes, you know, I've gone through LAX a couple of times, and if LAX speaks for the city in general, then yeah, mate, just only pass through there.
Right,
yeah. I'd just be passing through LA.
And that's not to say that you can't have a good lifestyle. It's just that I don't feel like enough people have access to that lifestyle. Like my second time around, on the advice of a producer at NBC's Today Show, when I met that person in New York, they said to stay by the beach, and they recommended Hermosa Beach, and I stayed at Hermosa Beach, and it was fantastic. Had a great tenure, had a great stay there. It was only for 2 days, but you know, beautiful weather, you know, lovely homes, you know, lots of eateries you could go out. You know, it was good fun. And you know, so I definitely think your enjoyment of LA is conditioned on where you stay. And the first time we stayed in a good hotel, it was nice, but it was just in a, you know, LA doesn't do CBD well, it does spread out well, you know, and it's not a drive, everything's a drive.
As a tourist, though, like, you are going to get the best of wherever you go to, because yeah, you go on and you're spending money to see good things. Yeah. So I'm sure, like, definitely LA, as a tourist, you'd have your good... definitely a lot of good things to do. But yeah, in terms of livability, if we're talking in that area, yeah, I think it's definitely worthy of coming last out of the cities you've got written down here, mate.
Beautiful. Well, we'll leave that one there, LA, and I can be kidding what people's thoughts are. Again, some highlights: Universal Studios, Comedy Club in Hermosa Beach, fantastic. But yeah, livability-wise, fortunately, has to come into the bottom of the list. Number four, and this might surprise some people, and it's only because I have to rank it and it's coming number five. And it's just because it's so, number four, it's just so expensive. It's the most expensive city I've ever been to, was New York, especially New York City. We're not talking about Queens, Bronx, or any other area. We're talking about Manhattan. And just the sheer cost of things. People say beforehand, before I went, you know, if you get rid of the exchange rate, a dollar, like Australian, it's like a dollar US, you know, in other words, it'd be $3.50 for a coffee or whatever. And it was like $5 for a coffee wherever you went. A minimum for a basic meal was above $20, and then you have to tip on top of it. The best thing in town was probably the subway. You know, we get paid like $2.50 for a trip. But everything was just, and the accommodation, I nearly had to lay down after I saw the bill come through, the accommodation. But that's all right. Again, it was a holiday. Don't mind spending a bit of money when I'm on a holiday. But I feel like everything is distorted in New York because of commercial real estate and finance. And those, they're high-paying jobs. When I was looking at the wage data, it was such a stark difference between Manhattan and all the other boroughs. Manhattan's average weekly salary is $3,967. It's the highest in the US. And that's because of its super finance industry. You got Wall Street, obviously, you know, the power of capital in the US. And then you've got commercial real estate as well. You know, and it's just high tenancy values placed on there because of how many people live in New York and the demand for real estate in that area. So that distorts it. If you actually look at the wages in Brooklyn, in Queens, in the Bronx, they're just the minimum wage is about $1,100 a week. You know, between $1,000 and $1,100 a week, so comparable to the other city. So it's such a stark difference there that it's almost impossible to compare. So if you actually do look at the median rent, $3,490. And you go off that median salary, it doesn't look too bad, but that distorts it. It's still the highest out of any of the cities listed here by a couple of $100s. And the average mortgage repayment isn't much better. But obviously, the key with the mortgage repayments are lower than the rents, so there's pressure on the rents there, and they're significant. But obviously, the key thing for a mortgage repayment is you've got to be able to buy the house in the first place. And saving up for a house in New York, again, distorted by the prices in Queens and the Bronx, but $778,000 is a median price. When I dare say it's probably up above $1 million in Manhattan, but the data strictly for Manhattan was limited when I was researching that. So, unfortunately, it comes in number four. On the upside, it is a great place. It is a great place to visit for a holiday. It was sensational. The first day, I had to sort of got my bearings, you know, and the reality, you know, of people just walking out across the lights whenever they felt like it, or people just driving through red lights, or delivery drivers pulling up three wide, you know, on streets that have got two lanes. You know, it was just nuts. But once you get used to the bearings of it and the pace, I'm a fast talker and I'm a fast mover. Not on a football field, but when I'm in New York City, I'm a fast mover. You know, and the things you could do, the comedy clubs on a Monday night, the jazz club on a Sunday night, phenomenal experiences. And I don't think if you spent 2 years there, you could do everything that New York's got to offer. So I think it's a great place for a young adult to go. I know potentially you've got plans to go there. I know you've been there many a time before. Mm. Maybe you just reflect on your personal experiences in New York.
Yeah, it's a wild place. I've been, like, it is terribly expensive. I've had the fortune to have a bit of a hookup with accommodation over there. So last two times, I haven't actually had to do the whole accommodation expense, which has been incredible. But yeah, it's definitely a super expensive place to go. But in terms of enjoyment and entertainment, you get what you pay for. It's wild. As you said, everything's just so fast and insane. But like, no matter what time of the night it is, there's always something happening. Like, you could stumble home at 2 a.m. and everything's open. Yep. You feel like it's like the late afternoon or something. It's just insane. Yeah, but I think a big problem over there in New York right now is that it's like an aging population, and no young people can't get into the house market, because I know a lot of Elena's friends who are at the age to buy a house and looking to buy a house are often having to get pushed right out in further into the away from the city, or even out of state, and end up going up to places like Connecticut or down to North Carolina or places like that, just because it's too hard to penetrate if you're not earning like top dollar in those business industries.
Yeah, and I think it's, as I said, it'd be a great place to live if you have a high paying job in finance, IT, and professional business services, which are the three major major employers. They're all certainly large specializations there. And also when we were there, it was Fashion Week as well, so it was super busy for that. I remember going.
Surely you queued up.
I was like, clearly these people have no sense of fashion, because I'm the only one in the city wearing RMs. I was like, are you kidding me? No one does agricultural chic as good as the man over here sitting next to you on the table here. But and it was pretty funny. Again, for someone who's quite self-aware, you would just see like these young, you know, wannabe influencers, or maybe they've made it, maybe they are influencers. I'm not sure what sort of metric you put on that, but they will just stop in the middle of the street, you know, and like do a cannon run over the shoulder with the handbag. And I was like, you're going to get yourself killed trying to get the perfect shot.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, like that, it is a bastardized economy. Like the amount of delivery drivers, you know, doing, you know, whether it's Amazon, UPS, or with some of the other carriers over there, or even like Uber Eats drivers, or Deliveroo, or whatever the other ones. I'm sure they've got plenty of DoorDash, rideshare platforms over there. You know, it is a very, you know, we talk about here a lot about, you know, making the economy work for people and not people working for the economy. I feel like a lot of people would have two jobs, and I don't have any data on this, but it just felt like that over there. It's such a fast moving place, and you know, like it's. I feel like some people work themselves to death to get by in New York. So that, for me, that brings it down in terms of the livability index. It does have a $15 minimum wage, which is the second highest on the list behind DC. And moving on now, that's a bit of New York covered. Again, if you want any sort of tips or guidance as to where to go in New York, let me know and I'll hit you up with a few suggestions. I'm sure Joe will as well. But number three on the list, and I wrangled with this one a bit. I wrangled between three and two. I went back and forth, and I really could be comfortable with them being interchanged. But I had Boston at number three. Now, Boston for me was probably you know the nicest city. You know, it's a harbor city. It's got plenty of tree canopy. You know, like it felt quite green. The two of the nicest suburbs I went to were Back Bay and Beacon Hill. The Light on the Hill. Ben Chifley visiting the Beacon on the Beacon Hill. How about that for a bit of inspiration? But it is super expensive. Everyone I ran into there and had some great personal anecdotes. Like I met the new travel secretary from the Boston Bruins, and she. I'm not joking. And it was the most chance encounter. The me and KB went to this, we're in Charlestown, because it's a historic part there with Bunker Hill there, and it's quite a few historic sites in relation to the Revolution, because Boston is one of the oldest cities. A lot of those revolutionary sites with the Boston Tea Party took place in Boston. For those history buffs listening to the podcast, hello, Mr. MJ Skinner down there in Canberra. We went there and we came across this lovely sort of tavern, this old style pub, and we went there for a meal. We'd just been to the USS Constitution down there in Boston Harbor and came back around and walked. So we're looking for a good feed, and we sat down there. And actually, the day before, we did a tour of the TD Garden.
The garden.
As they say in Boston. Hey, Bobby, get over here. How's your wife treating you? No, she's not very good at the moment. Get over here. Get out of here. Hit a Boston for you. And so we sat down, had a meal, and I saw that she had a lanyard on, and it was like a TD Garden lanyard. And we were both wearing Boston Bruins kit because we bought some kit. You know, we have a couple of merchandise sickos. You know, 25-year-old male number one discretionary item is merch. Hello, ladies. So he sat down, and she's from Canada, from Saskatchewan. No, she's not from Saskatchewan. She was from Calgary. I think she's listening to the podcast right now as well. And she was saying that, like, she pays over 50% of her income for rent. You know, she's moved in and couldn't get a gas connected. Her internet wasn't connected. It was a litany of issues there, because everything in Boston is labelled historic. You know, everything's a historic old Georgian or Federation style building. And so there's no development directly around the city. If you go further out, it's more affordable, and that's what brings it down. If you're willing to travel a bit further out from, like, Lexington or past Cambridge, where Harvard and MIT are, but if you want to live around the city there, it's going to cost you. So we're looking at there 50% rent to income ratio, so not as bad as LA, and mortgage repayments a bit lower, but that was distorted by the fact that it took in a bigger region. The average mortgage in Boston is not too dissimilar to New York. So it is the third most expensive city behind New York and San Francisco in the US. But again, it does have a lot of industry there, which leads up for it. You know, it's got education. So it is an education city. Harvard, MIT, Boston College, Boston University. You know, four great big unis with a lot of institutional knowledge there and history there. Obviously, Harvard, you know, one of the top five universities in the world. Could be, I think, even the top two. So you get that education there. You get a computer and mathematical industry going with there too. So a lot of knowledge economy. And that's big in an economy that's transitioned from goods to services, like many advanced economies have. So you can have a good paying job in Boston. And it feels like that the public good, it actually feels a bit of public goods being spread around, unlike LA. And it is a center for business and financial operations as well. But it's a great place, Harbour City, sports city, Catholic. You know, it ticks all the boxes for Paulie A. Smith over here in the Paulie Livability Index. But it is pricey. It is pricey, and it's going to cost you. But, you know, if you're willing to trade off a bit of cost for a great lifestyle, it's a good place to have. That's what's coming at number three. And again, I said it could come at number two with Washington, D.C. But the thing with Washington, D.C., they got it over the line. Highest minimum wage in the country, $16.10 an hour. And as well as that, it is an ornament to democracy. You know, for someone who's a quasi public servant like myself, if only some of those insurrectionists on their way to the Capitol on January 6, 2021, went through the National Archives Museum and looked at what people did to find common ground and find common good, maybe they could have avoided that, because it was a great place. And for anyone who, you know, is a believer in democracy and common good and shared good and compromise to you know, get some commonality and some semblance of society, it is a fantastic place to visit. All the Smithsonian museums are free. The National Mall, you've got the Capitol to Washington Monument. You know, for those sports fans in town, you've got the Capitals in the ice hockey. You've got the Wizards in the NBA. Thanks very much, Bradley Beal. And fun story while I'm thinking about Bradley Beal was the Uber driver who picked us up from DC airport to get us back into town where we were staying. He said he's a sports photographer, and he had like a Buffalo Bills thing on the back, so I was like a big Bills fan, you know. We started talking a bit of NFL, and he was surprised by how much we sort of knew. And he goes, oh, you know, if I knew you guys were sports fans, I could have got you into whatever the Commanders play. I think it's at FedEx Park or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And he goes, last week I was just shooting a Bradley Bill came down and opened up a new community park in one of the towns around. And I was like, oh, mate, great. You know, that's the sort of story. And super nice, connected with him on social. So next time I'm in DC, next time I'm there for my next diplomatic visit with Joseph Biden, I'll reach out to him. But he was great. It was a good place. Although, again, you could really notice that everyone who works in services is of African-American descent. I didn't notice any other sort of person of diversity or any white fella working in services. So they tend to be the lower paying jobs. So I'm not sure how you go ahead and fix that, but that's just something that I picked up. But the average hourly wage comparably is the highest. That's $38.69 an hour.
Would that be because of the mass amount of jobs would be public service?
Yeah, well, that'd be part of it. There's good jobs. And speaking of good jobs, I caught up with Marko Bojasevic, my mate from work. He's one of his colleagues. I caught up with him who just got a new job over there. I won't give out the department just for confidentiality reasons. But we caught up with him. Really nice guy. And then there is high-paying jobs. And also there's been a bit more development around the skirts. You know, like the planning laws aren't as tight as around Boston. So obviously with that comes greater supply, greater amount of homes that people would move into. And you can have a good lifestyle in DC with that sort of wage. And the average rent is $2,600 a month, so it's 39% rent to income. Again, that can be distorted. You can probably find a good deal around there. And the mortgage repayment is about 37%, so much below that sort of 50% cap that we saw in LA and Boston. Hence why it's coming in at number two on the list. That were the key things for that. Obviously, the key industries there: business and financial operations. So also, it's not just public service anymore, but businesses are liking it as an environment to operate, because you're next door to Virginia, you've got Pennsylvania to your north, and you've got Maryland, crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does right next door, affectionately known as the tri-state area. So that's that. Any thoughts on, have you been to DC?
I haven't been to DC.
I would recommend it. It's a good place to visit
next year.
And it's not too far from New York or that's in that northeast corner.
Next year, I'll go and shake hands with another great JB.
Very good. Very good. For all our listeners there, the president and my co-host share the same initials, if you needed me to draw the dots for you. So there we go. Coming in at number one on the list, and this might surprise people, but I am a man of soul. I'm a man of integrity, and that's what we get in Philadelphia. It's always sunny in Philadelphia. It wasn't while we were staying there, but it was sunny in my heart, and that was the main thing. Definitely number one on the list. It was the city of brotherly love. Again, yeah, I'm not sure the euphemism that or the saying that it's the people that make places, not the places itself, definitely rings true for Philly. Everyone that we came across was super nice. We go out of their way. Can't believe you visited Philly along the way. Most people skip us. I don't know why, because it was a great city. And as a university man and a sports man, it ticks both those boxes. Sports, South Philadelphia sports complex, I thought I'd died and gone to heaven.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. You had the baseball field, Citizens Park, right next to Wells Fargo Center, where they played the basketball with the 76ers and the ice hockey. And then you got the Lincoln Financial Field with the Philadelphia Eagles, who are now 3-0. Jalen Hurts, ride with him. But we'll leave that for a bit of sport later on. Things like when we went to Lincoln Financial Field, it was closed, but we went up to the ticket box, and the person there behind said, "Let me see what I can do for you. You've come a long way." Next minute, one of the interns comes around and shows us around the stadium for free. You know?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. You wouldn't get that in New York, where you have to pay for everything but your bloody liver.
You wouldn't get it anywhere. Yeah, really.
And it was just fantastic. You know, so they go around, take as many photos as you want. And the worst part about it, or but maybe for certainly for her, was that she wasn't even getting paid. She was an intern. You know, and I said, we've had this discussion before that all internships should be paid. You know, there shouldn't be anything that's unpaid, even at university, and maybe that will help fix a bit of skill shortages there, but that's just my take on that. Well, what do I know?
Did you tip it?
Well, I thought it'd be like, if it didn't feel like the environment.
Conflict of interest.
Yeah, exactly.
Her own money.
That's right. Like, but connected on LinkedIn, so she's ever around. I can always show her around Breen Oval or St. Patrick's.
Give her a tour of the arena, Sydney.
I can show her Breen Oval at St. Patrick's. Yeah. You know? So this is where I got out for a duck in the 16th. So yeah, that was great. Much more affordable. The hotel we stayed at was right in the center of town. It was really nice and definitely the most affordable out of all of them. average hourly wage is $30, so it's closer to the US average, but the rent's only $17.55, so like way, way down on every other city that we visited. And your average mortgage repayment's only 25% of your total income, going off the averages there. And the average house price, $238,000. Steal. But the average minimum wage is $7 an hour. So that's a bit low, and hopefully, I think there is plans to hopefully get that uplifted, but given across those things, it definitely ticked a lot of boxes on the livability scale. Again, a lot of these things could depend on the sort of job you have and the sort of lifestyle you want to lead. But you definitely felt like you could live an affordable lifestyle. Like everything else hasn't been jacked out of the bloody sky in like the other cities. And University of Pennsylvania. What a university. Now, Harvard was great. The Harvard tour was great. Sarah, how are you going?
She's listening, mate.
She's there. Red Sox, brilliant. I forgot to mention on that, but... yeah, the University of Pennsylvania, one of the best health and education precincts I've come across. And I said this to a few people at work, but and I said this to Cavey, and I was going, it's quite a good health and education precinct you got here. And this, the University of Pennsylvania, one of the oldest universities in America. It's Ivy League, 1740. It's all that jazz. It's Benjamin Franklin sitting around there every second corner. You go around the statue or something of Benjamin Franklin, because that's where you signed the Constitution, that sort of gear. And it felt like a learning place. And you've got University of Pennsylvania Health. You know, you've got the 25-story health building with like 150 metres long. It's a general hospital. You've got a children's hospital. You've got a pediatric research facility. It actually felt like it had to be an industry clustered around there. Mm. And it felt really, you know, University City Philadelphia, so they call it. And plus, they had the University of Pennsylvania track open. And being the wannabe athlete I am, living my dream, sporting dreams vicariously through others.
Did you go for a trundle?
I did. I went for a trundle.
Went for a Brock.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, it's quite humiliating when you think you're moving so fast in your head and then you see yourself on tape. And you're yeah. It's like you're stuck in mud.
Yeah.
It's like I've got a couple of concrete bricks on my feet.
It's like go-karting. You ever go go-karting, you think you're going 400 k's per hour, and then you watch the people go after you. And you're like, fuck, is that what I was looking like?
Yeah, so great city, Philly. I would recommend it to anyone who's going through there. What they could use in terms of the livability index, the poorly livability index, that is they could use some of the money, the city money, to fix up the potholes in the centre of town, because there was just like, there's these massive potholes that if you went down, you wouldn't come back.
Sinkholes.
Nearly bloody sinkholes. But like the cheese steaks, can't go wrong with a bit of steak, a bit of cheese, and a bread roll. You know, simple stuff. They do the simple stuff right in Philly. And in great sports town, a lot of Catholics there. Again, it's rather the alley of Pulio Smith over here, being an Irish Catholic descent. And so, yeah, that's the Pulley Livability Index. I'd love to get everyone's thoughts on that for those cities that have been. What city should we go to next? We'll take it on the road, like a bit like for ESPN First Take. Get out of Dallas and Austin there in the south, or New Orleans. But that's it. So just recapping, 5, Los Angeles. 4, New York City, that is Manhattan. 3, Boston. And number 2, Washington, D.C. And topping the list, number 1, Philadelphia. So that's the Pulley Livability Index. If you want the methodology, you're going to have to request that via email. That's confidential, and that's a lot of intellectual property that's gone into this. But it was a lot of the sources were derived from the US Bureau of Labor Statistics and other quality business sources. So that's it for that. And we're not going to do an ad this week. We're just going to roll straight into sport, because it's too important to do an ad this week. We're going to go straight to sport, and we're going to go to Parramatta. We're talking a bit of rugby league, and we're talking the Battle of the West. We're talking the Parramatta Eels taking on the Penrith Panthers in the 2022 NRL Grand Final. It's going to be one hell of a match. Joe, I'm going to give you the floor here for a minute or two while I just go turn off the dryer. And you can talk about the needs of Parramatta just while I get a short break.
Thanks, Tom. Well, let me set the scene, listeners. It's 24-all. There's 30 seconds left. It's fourth tackle. Parramatta are on the Penrith 20-metre line. Mitch Moses is sitting in the pocket. What happens next will blow your mind. Mitch Moses will kick a field goal to win the grand final. 25-24. Pauls, now that you're back. Mate, I closed my eyes last night, and the first thing that popped into my head is Mitch Moses kicking a field goal at a Coors Stadium. Thoughts?
Well, it's, I didn't go to Disneyland, but I feel like I'm at Disneyland now because that's like living in fantasy land. If anything, I think it's... I'm not sure if it comes down to a field goal. Given recent issue, I think it might come down to a penalty goal, especially if Ashley Klein gets the gig.
Do we know who will be refereeing? Well, will that come out tomorrow, will it?
It will come out tomorrow. Yeah. He's given the preference at the moment because he's refereed Origin. And, again, it's beyond belief, but we won't go into it. This is not about Ashley Klein. This is about the humble people of Parramatta and Penrith.
Grand finals are different, but a lot slips through the cracks in grand final. So I think it's going to be a tough game. I don't think the ref is going to have as much of a part in it as they have had sort of towards the back end of the season. I don't know. I think if Parramatta are going to win, it's going to be very close.
Yeah.
And then I think if they lose, they'd lose by a lot. But I don't know. I think Parramatta they don't have much to lose. You know, no one really expected them to be there. No one really expects them to beat Penrith. Whereas Penrith are the defending premiers, the heavy favourites. You know, they're often referred to as the best team in the world right now. They house some of the greatest players in the competition, in the world. So I think they have a lot to lose. There's a bit more pressure on them than there is for Parramatta, and I think that's a really comfortable spot to be in, especially as a fan as well of Parramatta.
Yeah, the underdog status definitely is a great thing to have in grand final week. But if we just go to the matchup for a second again here, and Parramatta versus the Cowboys, I think Parramatta showed a lot of resilience. And if you look at the statistics of that game, you would think, without seeing the scorecard, you would think North Queensland won. Mm-hmm. North Queensland had the majority of possession, they had the most meters gained, had less errors. But the resilience and the scramble defence of Parramatta, which I'm not sure what we've seen on a consistent basis throughout the year, but seems to have been strung together nicely over the last couple of weeks. Mm. Potentially, you know, derails Penrith. You know, that resilience of, you know, turning up, but they're going to have to be at their 100% best. Whereas I think Penrith, you know, like there's different ways for them to win. I think there's probably one way for Parramatta to win, and that's for them to match it up front.
Mm.
For RCG and Paulo Apollo to win that and dominate that, or get one over Fisher Harris and Leota.
Well, in the wins we've had against them this season, that's where it's been won. It's been won through the middle. We haven't matched any team on the edge really this year. Yeah. Our edge defense has been absolutely woeful. You know, we stood up for a couple games in the finals, but I mean, Cowboys still put. How much? What was it?
20. 24-20.
They still put 20 on us. So, you know, in a prelim, you don't want 20 points against you at all, and especially not in a grand final, you can't afford 20 points. So, I think they got their hands full. But in saying that, though, it was never going to be easy defending in North Queensland on what, like a 30-degree night. So, I think, like as you said, their scramble defense is really good. And yeah, I think, you know, it's going to win the game for them, the defense.
Yeah. Yeah, and we just—it's going to have to be. There's going to be, you know, moments of lapse of concentration, the ability for Penrith to be—they're a pendulum team. Like they can absorb a lot. Like we saw on the weekend at South for 35 minutes, were probably the better team. They had a 12-0 lead. You know, for the best part of the first half. Granted, you know, Penrith had a couple of tries disallowed, some more just than others in terms of their warrant for disallowment, but. And you just saw, you know, you could just tell by halftime that South had done all that work, but Penrith got to the halftime level, and it was just going to be a free run in the second half, and that's what it was. And Nathan Cleary is, we could be witnessing, I know people say he's only, you know, 24, 25, but he's already run a premiership. He's taken him to three straight grand finals. This guy is a freak, and he's an Australian captain in waiting in the World Cup, or if the quasi captain if Yeo or Tedesco get it, but he. His ability to, you know, like I've never seen a guy who just has so much control over the field.
Mm.
You like to get the plays A to B, and the amount of time a halfback touches the ball, when to throw, when to run, when to drop a forward underneath, it is second to none. There was that set where South, I think they either knocked it on or there was some reason they Penrith got a seven tackle set, and they ran out of it and they got Edwards got like 20 meters off the kick.
Mm.
Off the first touch, and then Cleary just tucked it under and went over the advantage line. Then it went out the kick out, and then next play, like, they swing back to the right, and then they come back to the left, and Luai put a kick in for Isaac Tagle to score. And I was like, well, I was watching it, and I was like, there was just no team that can level up like that. It's a beautiful thing to watch. But in saying that, you know, styles make fights, and Parramatta have a good style against Penrith, you know. They've beaten them twice this year, the only team to do so. Obviously turned around in the first prelim, but you don't get these chances every day. And at the end of the day, it's 13 men versus 13 men, right, or 17 versus 17 if you include the bench.
That first round of the finals is nothing to go off, but like, Eels are winning 8-6, Mitch Moses gets knocked out, Wonga Blake drops that ball, they score two back-to-back, and then Eels kind of just roll over. You know, Mitch Moses doesn't go down, things change. Like, we're up already, I think, you know, after, what was it, 60, 65 minutes or something. So, you know, you just got to put in a good 80 against Penrith. And it's doable. It really is doable. Fairy tales do happen, Pools.
Yeah, they do.
Got a lot of thoroughbreds on our team, I promise.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
But no, I think we could stay composed. Mate, Mitch Moses went through the roughest week of his life. And, you know, he had a couple...
It's a bit rough on the trial.
Rough as in just, like, you know, not being able to be there for his partner and the birth of his daughter, and also losing his grandma, then having to lock in and focus for a prelim. He did have a couple lapses in concentration to kick the ball out on the full two sets in a row, but he held his nerve, and they got us over the line in the end. And I think other than his couple little mistakes, he had a blinder. So I think they'll be frothing at the bit.
Fantastic.
To get out there.
Well, that brings us to the point where we have to make our tips. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
I've already been. 25-24.
I thought that was more of a fantasy rather than a tip.
Mate, but I saw it.
Yeah.
It was real.
Yeah.
It was real.
Well, the best thing for you and the best thing for Parramatta fans is that if I ride with Penrith, because I'm known as the kiss of death around these parts, anything that I like or anything I support hits the shit on the way out. And so I'm going to go Penrith by 8.
Well, I think anyone, like, I'd be surprised if most, like, neutral fans in this debate, where, like, you're a fan of the sport, but your team's in the grand final, I think everybody would, like, subconsciously be expecting Penrith to win and to win quite comfortably. But it's the grand final, mate. Weird things happen.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's where we'll leave it for there. And just before I forget, shout out to Perry LeBrock, a long-time listener of the podcast and one of Maitland's finest pickers. He won the President's Cup with the Maitland Pickers over the weekend. Former member of Sydney University Touch Football Club. I can attest for his footballing now. At the ripe old age of 30, he's won himself a President's Cup, which is for Country Rugby League the highest possible token you can win on that. So no doubt he'll be saying hello to the world back probably tomorrow after a big weekend with the boys travelling down from Maitland. They certainly know how to party up there in the Hunter. So shout out to him, and I know he's a long-time listener of the podcast, so it was good to see him get over the line. Those ripe old hips of his, you know, waddling down the sideline there to get one over in the corner, and he was certainly happy about it. I still remember one of my great stories about Perry is he played University of Newcastle touch football uni games. I'm not sure whether he meant the age limit back in the day, but he went either way, and there was like 7 or 8 of them, very talented sort of like, Central Coast Touches and Newcastle Touches, just a different beast up there. They've been playing since they were young. And there was 8 of them, and they would just rotate across the field. Anyone who knows, played a bit of touch, knows 8 is a very low number when you're playing a 40-minute game and you're playing 3 a day and you're rotating around. And they were just, each of them would rotate between positions, middle, link and wing. That's how talented they were. And they would just throw 35-meter cutouts, you know, and win most of their games. So very talented footy player. And congratulations, Perry. So I hope you enjoy that shout out, and good on you, mate. And so moving on now to a bit of political football in itself. Last night was the Prime Minister 13's game. Albo and the Papua New Guinean Prime Minister welcomed the teams at Suncorp. And beyond anything else, it was just great to see some Tigers players in green and gold because you don't get to see them very often. Dane Laurie at the back, Luke Garner, I know he's off to Penrith, but a long-time servant at the club, and Jake Simkin getting a run off the bench. And they were too good, too classy for Papua New Guinea. I think winning 64-14 in the end. Daly Cherry was captain of the team, and you had Matt Burton, Ben Hunt, Tino Fasua Malawi in there as well. And
nailed that, brother.
And so there was definitely a fair bit of that team will be going for World Cup selection. Cobbo on the wing, Adokar potentially in consideration as well. And that's led me to my decision to announce what I thought. Mick Anderson and Corey Parker running through their 17, their top line 17 for the Australia World Cup, because obviously the World Cup's coming up in the UK in the back end of October into November. I had to run through my 17, and feel free to critique it, but I'll just read through it from 1 to 17. So I've got Tedesco at the back, Adokar on the wing, Latrell and White in the centres, Valentine Holmes completing the other wing, Munster and Cleary in the halves. I've got Tino and Jake Jaboyevic sitting in the front row with Coruscant at rake. I've got Cameron Murray, Angus Cry and Isaiah Yeo in the back row, with the option of potentially putting Hudson Young in there instead of Crichton and moving Crichton to the bench. And then the bench, I've got Ben Hunt, RCG, Pat Carrigan, and Tom Flegler, with Sean Lane also being in the as a potential inclusion in the back row. They still haven't decided about how I want my back row formation to look like. But early thoughts on that team, I think it's a pretty strong team.
Yep. Yeah, I like it. I like the... I think I'd change your front rowers. I'd probably have Tino off the bench, and I'd probably have RCG on there. Obviously, I've got the blinders on because I'm Parramatta, but I think on that world stage, it's good to have one power front rower, and then a more dynamic kind of quick fit front rower. So I'd say RCG, and then I'd have Tino off the bench. I'd probably have Hunt at hooker, Harry Grant off the bench, and run that kind of little duo sort of hooker thing that a lot of clubs are doing lately. And then Lane. I'd probably bring Lane on the bench as well. I'd have Crichton starting with Murray and Yeo in the back row. Outside backs, I'd have Adokar and Cobbo. Centres, I'd probably have this is a tough one. I'd probably have Latrell and Matt Burton, and then I'd have 6 and 7s would be clear in Munster.
Yeah.
Fullback Tedesco.
Yeah, very good. Oh, that's, I think that's a strong team as well. No place for White in the team?
I don't think extended. I think he's definitely a rep caliber player, but I think his specialty position of 5'8 is, you know, we've got a lot of stock at that position. I definitely think he's, you know, maybe third or fourth on that list. So I don't think you like to force a player like that into a position he's not super familiar in. Like, in terms of Latrell, you can definitely put him in the centres because he spent a lot of time there at Sydney Roosters and he's played a lot of rep at centre. But I think we've seen a lot of issues with New South Wales forcing people into positions that they're not comfortable with and it not paying off very well. So, unfortunately, I wouldn't have Crichton in the team. I probably would have him in the squad. You never know what can happen injury-wise, and he'd have a good player to have up the pocket. But he wouldn't be in my starting team pools.
Fantastic. Well, I think you've that's a good analysis you've done there. And I think it's going to be the best World Cup yet, I think, given the strength in the New Zealand squad has been talked about a fair bit, a lot, as well as sort of the players who have made themselves eligible for selection of Samoa into the Samoan team. And then you've got the Tongan team as well, which will be very strong. And you can't forget the old English mob, who would rock up defensively and, you know,
Did they play a game this morning? They might have, didn't they?
They might have. Let me check.
Against Fiji, I believe. Let me just check that.
Let's check that for
we'll
me.
We'll get our resident researcher to look that up.
Hembo. That's Hembo doing. So that's that. While Joe's looking that up, just a thought, a special note was that Kipchoge, Kenyan marathon runner and distance runner, he broke the world record overnight in the Berlin marathon. Did a 201.09, a 42K, 21K an hour he's running. That's unbelievable. Did a 59-minute split, half marathon. We're all running 42Ks now. That's just insane. That is absolutely mind-boggling. I couldn't run a K in what the splits he was doing at the end of that race. It is just absolutely outrageous. I can't imagine what it was like to see that in person, because it looked like he would have been sprinting, but he sprinted for 42 Ks. It's just a huge distance. Now, bit of a shout out here. If you want to get around me, I'll do a LinkedIn post later this week. But I'm doing the long walk from home walk at the end of next week for the Wayside Chapel. Now, if anyone's unfamiliar with what the Wayside Chapel does, it supports homeless people get meals or find a comfy home or comfy bed to sleep in for a night. There's one based in King's Cross and one based in Bondi. The people who work there are phenomenal, and obviously goes to solve one of society's most crippling issues, that is homelessness. There's way too many people who sleep rough. We can't be throwing stones from glass houses here in Sydney talking about homelessness in Los Angeles and those sort of places, because we have our own. If you walk any time around the city, you're going to find homeless people on nearly every corner. I know when I used to do my walk when I worked down in the Pitt Street there, you'd come across 10 or 12 people from Mountain Place to where I worked every morning, you know. It would make me sick that I'd go there and you can earn a decent dollar while these people, beg for a next meal, or $1 or $2 to get a next meal or find something to scrounge something to eat together. So, they do a lot of good work, the Wayside Chapel. So if you do want to get around me, let me know and I can...
What will you be doing?
I'll be walking 28 Ks from Parramatta to King's Cross. And so 28 Ks is the average time a homeless person goes seeking shelter every week.
Awesome. I mean, it's awesome that you're doing the walk.
I know what you mean. I think those listening know what you mean as well. But that goes to show, a bit of that. And, doing this is the least you could do, and I'm glad that I have the opportunity to do that. So please get around it and help me reach my fundraising total, and I'm sure there's plenty of other worthy causes and other people getting around it as well. So that'd be greatly appreciated, and I think it's a good time to leave it there. And perhaps
I do have a prediction. I do have a Nostradamus. You have a
Nostradamus? Yeah, hit us with it.
I don't think let me rephrase that I know Pools, I know, because this is another thing I've seen. I see things. No team in the World Cup will come within 20 points of Australia. Okay? No team. Yeah. I've been hearing too much yarn about, New Zealand this, Samoa that, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Whatever. They rank us fourth. We haven't played on the international stage in a long time. The boys are going to be humming. They're going to be frothing to get out there. And our team is going to be a pack of thoroughbred animals.
Elite cowboy specimens.
Nobody's coming within 20.
Right. Well, I would like to echo that sentiment as well. I'm not sure if they're within 20. I think Australia will win. I think it might be close in some places. I don't think we'll, New Zealand's a really good team. I think probably Australia-New Zealand final, with England and Samoa probably being the other two teams that make up the final four. I think Australia should still win. You got Cleary, Tedesco, and Latrell Mitchell in a team. Slots out if you had your boy. And Munster as well.
Cleary and Munster in the halves.
Yeah, Cleary and Munster in the halves. Still got to lay a full platform there, but there should be enough quality in the forwards to do that. But thanks for that prediction and that Nostradamus. We do know you've got a good hit record with the Nostradamuses. But for those long suffering Parramatta fans listening and for yourself, I thought we'd play out this week's podcast. A little special edition of your favourite songs from Coldplay, Paradise. See you next week, ladies and gentlemen.